Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast as we're going through this holiday week. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Hanukkah, Happy everything that represents your holiday as we get to the end of the year, and we hope you're enjoying it. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, and I am joined by my co-host, Adam Murray.
Happy Festivus.
Festivus? So you're a Seinfeld fan as well?
No.
Wait, is Festivus real?
It's for the rest of us, isn't it?
I don't know.
The airing of grievances.
Well, is there a lot of grievances that are aired during the holidays in your side of the woods?
Oh, no. My wife just has the airing of grievances on a weekly basis, it seems.
Yeah, well, my little nephew's birthday is going to... It just passed, and then my daughter's real birthday is Monday. So, you know, you always have to balance things with the birthday parties because you don't want to have the birthday parties too close to Christmas Day. Because, number one, you don't want to try to do too many presents at once. And the other part is that you're not going to be able to get everybody to come down during the holiday week. So you try to plan the birthday parties earlier than their actual birthdays are. But it's made it even worse because now we have a birthday party for our daughter. And then we have the real birthday for our daughter at our house, and then we have Christmas. So now all we've done is just add a third birthday party for our child.
Yeah, you're not spoiling her, are you?
She was the first grandchild from my side of the family. So yes, she's the princess. She's the Stephanie McMahon of the Reich family. But I don't want to spoil it too much because not everybody likes Stephanie McMahon. But we're gonna have an enjoyable time as we spend this week trying to get over the holidays, get a couple of work breaks, just to be able to chit chat, and we're back here chit chatting about the NBA. You got anything to talk about with the NBA, or you wanna just go ahead and wrap the show up?
Let's just thanks for listening. Merry Christmas, see you next year, good night.
Okay, well, I can't turn off the recorder just yet, so we still got a little bit of ways to go. And we're going to have a little bit of a Christmas theme for this episode. It's time for giving. Not necessarily always giving something good, so we'll expand on that later when we get to our topics for our Christmas-themed episode of the NBA Team Podcast. But first, the Christmas Day games. We previewed the Christmas Day games last year. It was the first time we had done it on this show. And we always talk about how, even though it's still pretty far from, the nitty-gritty of the NBA regular season, what is there is some sort of shred of importance to the NBA games in Christmas Day. Not necessarily, in 2011 when they happened to have Christmas Day games as the opening of the NBA season because of the lockout. I'm talking about in the regular season for 82 games. What is the significance of the Christmas Day games? Is it sort of a platform for teams to sort of launch their season if they're sort of in a rut and then kind of jump back in? Or do you think it's just a nice, ceremonious type of slate of games for national television, but it's not really that important for the regular season?
Well, it's a tradition because there's always been those Christmas games that you remember watching. And B, that's their day. No other, with the exception of the NFL landing on the off Sunday.
Yeah. I don't think there are any bowl games on Christmas Day, if I stand corrected.
There used to be one.
Maybe the Independence Bowl or something like that.
A Christmas Tree Bowl or what? Some random bowl. But for the most part, this is their day. All the other sports, look, you have it. We'll give it to you. And, full slate of games, one after the other, after their stagger, so you can watch every single thing. And this is the time not when so much teams start doing things differently, it's the fans start take notice of what's going on.
Yeah, because for example, when we did last year, if you just gauged that game or that Christmas Day games based on the season, it wouldn't really be a good indicator because the Heat, took care of business against the Cavaliers. The Cavaliers are struggling. They got out of their rut, and the Heat really never... But the Heat never got out of their rut. So if you just go by that game, you would think that the Cavaliers struggled all year, but they bounced back pretty quickly after that. And I remember the Warriors losing to the Clippers. It was one of their only losses that entire season out of 15 of them. So, it's a national television platform, where, the NBA is the star of the show in the sports world, so that's a great thing. But I do take credence in saying that it's not... it's not the most important games in the world.
No, the most important games are, you know, a week or two before the All-Star game is when the trade deadline starts happening. You're going, can I make a push? Can I do it? This is the time to either put up or shut up. This is just, you got 10 of 30 teams are on TV. So you got one-third of your league is getting national exposure.
Yeah.
A lot of, you know, some teams you never see ever, and this year there's a lot of teams that don't deserve to be on TV.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, but they expanded that after, you know, when ABC ESPN took the contract in 2003. You know, it kind of started there, but before when it was on NBC, they only had one game. You know, and the Knicks always had a game. You know, because
yeah, but the thing, you know, we talk like, oh, it's only 2003. Yeah, you realize that was 12 years ago. That's a whole decade of now. You know, we act like
expanding the schedule.
Yeah, it seems like, oh, this was just recently. But no, this has been going on for a full decade now. Kids have grown up with NBA on Christmas.
No, speak for yourself. I'll never grow up. I'm like Peter Pan in that Geico commercial.
Okay.
Now, I want to talk about maybe just a couple of games that are going to be passing through. We got the Heat and the Pistons on Tuesday, and then they have a full slate of games on Wednesday. I don't even want to get into all those because there's just so many. No games on Christmas Eve. Now, I'm not sure if this is a first. I do remember a couple of teams playing on Christmas Eve in previous seasons, but this year it is radio silence. And then that we get into the treat of Christmas Day. We'll start on ESPN starting at 12 o'clock Eastern, and that'll be my New Orleans Pelicans in Miami to play the Heat. I think we're at a point now where we can actually just do kind of like game-by-game breakdowns. Like, what do you see here with the Pelicans and the Heat? Or do you see anything, is there anything that you've noticed out of either of the teams since we last convened?
We feel bad that, you know, New Orleans is going to be on national TV because they're just going to lose by 40 in front of an empty arena.
Because the Heat fans, they're not early risers, are they?
They're not early risers on Christmas Day, nonetheless. It's, nope, that got the, yeah.
I'll tune in, especially because, you know, it's the 11 o'clock game. It's when you're opening the presents or when you're getting to the relative's house, depending on how far away you have to drive. You know, so some people, they might be tuning in by that game, or they might be tuning in to the next one at 2:30 Eastern, and that's when the Bulls play the Oklahoma City Thunder in OKC. We'll talk about the Bulls a little bit later because
we have a lot to talk about the Bulls.
The Thunder are starting to look pretty decent. Like,
Are they just looking at the exact same team they have every year?
Did you see Kevin Durant's beautiful Dr. J under the rim play on TNT?
Yeah.
It was nice.
I saw that they had that that drive to the basket.
Yes.
Is that the same play you're talking about? No.
That's the same play.
Well, it's okay.
I love awkward silences. They're fun between you and me. And then there's, so that one's going to be on ABC. That's going to be the first start on the major broadcast network. That's going to be the Bulls and the Thunder. The main event we could probably both agree is going to be the Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors at 5 o'clock Eastern on ABC. Kyrie Irving announced on Twitter, "I'm back." He didn't send it through a fax machine anymore like Michael Jordan did in '95. He sent it through a tweet. "I'm back." I don't think it had the same palpitations that it did when Michael decided to come back from retirement. But nonetheless, Kyrie Irving, one of the best point guards in the NBA, is going to be back in action. He came back against the Philadelphia 76ers, so I guess we can call that a warm up. You know how Brandon Jennings played in that D League game, coming back from the Achilles tendon? This is kind of like the D League comeback.
This is their D League, yeah. But you know, we're not gonna expect anything from Irving. Yeah, he's not gonna guard Curry for 30-40 minutes. He's gonna be playing 20 minutes off the bench again.
Well, no, I was talking about the Sixers game.
Oh, the Sixers game was just D-League.
That's D-League.
I've just looked past that.
Yeah, now the Warriors, they've not lost at home yet. They came pretty close against, I'm already skipping who was. It was the Bucks. The Bucks gave them a lot of trouble the second time around, and everybody was expecting the Warriors to just blow them out because of the fact that the Bucks had ended their winning streak. But the Bucks fought hard, and it took a comeback for the Golden State Warriors to put them away. So, you know, they're looking a little more vulnerable at home lately. But what do you see here with the Cavaliers? LeBron's looking really good. He looked great on TNT against the Thunder, even though he had that unfortunate incident with Jason Day's wife running into him when he was trying to catch a loose ball. She's okay. She had to go to the hospital for evaluation. She probably got a concussion. You know what? Let's just talk about that for just a second. How close have you ever sat in an NBA game?
Third row, just behind the boards.
How close is that seat?
It's behind the hockey boards, so I'm pretty, you know, there's like three courtside rows that are in front of it.
Now, we talked about this a little bit after the Paul George injury with the baluster, you know, whatever they call that base on the bottom of the basket when he ran into it, and whether photographers are too close so that players have to you know, turtle up so that they don't hurt anybody. But, you know, these are athletes. These are athletes going full tilt in competition, and sometimes you're going to go outside of those outside of the bounds in order to try to keep the ball alive. What can you do about this? Is there anything proximity-wise they could do, or is that just something that's just, it's a unique appeal to the game of basketball that you just simply cannot eliminate because of revenue and
that's the only thing right there. They've added more, there's more courtside seats, and you notice how they moved the bench? Mm-hmm. The bench is halfway in the crowd now.
Yeah. Now they literally have the elevated courts, which is even more dangerous for players because if they slip off of that, now you're looking at a broken leg.
But if they have the elevated courts don't have courtside seats anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But the it's just a revenue thing. Okay, it's, you know, I don't have no idea how much courtside, at least $1,000. So you're making just one row, you have just $20,000 per game over 42 games, just that's the only reason you have more seats. The score, remember the scoreboards used to be huge? They used to go from coach to coach?
Yes.
Of just ads. Now it's just one little ad because, well, we could fit more seats in there. And
not only that, those boards are now digital. They used to just be kind of flip boards like you used to see behind the batter's box in the in a baseball game. Now they're digital, and those things hurt too, you know? You don't want to run into those at full speed.
Yeah, that's just the only reason they have that is revenue. What's the quick thing to do? All right, you can, you know, take away the front row of seats or what? Put up the scoreboards back up. It's not, they're still going to run into it.
Is there any kind of fault there with LeBron's incident, or it was just a freak accident and it just happened to be athlete's wife?
It was just happened. It was a famous athlete's wife who didn't react at all. She just sat there and was like, huh. Like, it didn't even look like she put her arms up to block it or anything.
The one thing she did say is that she was glad that her husband didn't jump in, because if he had, it would have been two guys, you know, slamming on top of, you know, her face, which would have been pretty tough.
Yeah. But, like, we've seen the scorer's table, you know, they're going for a loose ball. They jump on the scorer's table, jump to the hockey boards, and then they jump to, like, the second or third row seating.
There were two guys that were, like, masters at that. Like, when they would do it, it looked like collateral damage. One was Shaquille O'Neal. You know, everybody remembers the famous one where he literally slid into the cameraman's bird-eye view. And then there was a couple of them where he literally jumped into the fray. But I don't know, maybe it's because he's kind of got that little girth to him. It, like, he's kind of, like, fluffy. You know, where when Shaq dives on top of you, it's kind of like a teddy bear. Whereas Dennis Rodman was just wild. Dennis Rodman would just jump right in. I remember he had the incident in Minnesota where he kicked the cameraman. But yeah, those two guys were just all over the place. But anybody can do that. We've seen a lot of really wild incidents. I remember one time, you remember in the Final Four, maybe in 2012, Terrence Jones ran right into the Louisville cheerleader, am I right?
Yeah.
Like, he slammed right into her and hurt her. You know, it was a total accident. Sent a greeting card, or, you know, maybe a tweet apologizing. You know, you could tell LeBron was a little bit perturbed by it. Do you think that's something that really he needs to worry about? You know,
well, he was perturbed because it, you know, obviously in this day of caution, okay, we need to put a back brace on her, and it's just like that seemed a little bit overkill. It may look like he killed her.
It wasn't
her.
Even her that was insisting on it. It's just protocol.
Well, it's protocol due to lawsuits and injury. You know, it's, but he just seemed perturbed of, like, really, we need to stop this game for a half hour because of this?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and the flow of the game was kind of ruined. It was about 3 minutes to go in the game, and LeBron really wasn't the same after that. He hit a jump shot, but I remember he bricked the last two free throws because his mind was not in the game.
Yeah, it's not that, but You see it all the time. Like, you'll watch a game, at least once a game, somebody's chasing a ball into the crowd, and they crash into the cameraman and whatnot.
Yeah.
So it happens, but it's only making stories because of who it was. If it was just some random dude, it would have been on, like, he threw his beer in the air. It would have been on the SportsCenter's not top 10. It's just who it was is that we're talking about it.
Yeah. Or like JaVale McGee kissing that old lady in Denver. That was just funny. You know, sometimes things like that, you see them on those, like, you remember how they had those old 80s blooper reel NBA videos, and they would just have people crashing into the crowd, and they would just, do something funny or rub their head or something like that, and you would just kind of laugh it off. But you always want to avoid injury. But they're moving on now, and they're going to be at full strength for the first time basically all season. Iman Shumpert is back as well, and he's played pretty decently playing a Golden State Warriors team. I'm not sure what the status is for Harrison Barnes. I would assume he's not going to play yet, but just give me a winner. What do you think?
In this finals preview again, I would like to see Cleveland come in and win, because I just would at some point Golden State has to lose.
Yeah, I see it the same as last year. I think, because last year Golden State beat Cleveland when they were without LeBron, and then later in the season as the Cavs improved, they played on TNT, and the Cavs beat the Warriors pretty soundly at home. So, and I see the same here. I think both teams hold home court. I think the Warriors...
Yeah, if this were at Cleveland, I would pick Cleveland. But I'd like to see one of those, they lost on the home court. It would give, as opposed to just... I really don't want to hear, can they be the best team? 72-9, 72-9, 72-9. I don't want to hear that for the rest of the season.
Well, we're going to hear that one, and we're going to hear whether or not the Philadelphia 76ers or maybe the Lakers are going to be on a race for the worst team in the NBA maybe ever. I mean, I don't foresee either of those teams getting to maybe more than 12 wins, would you say?
Well, you say that, but we said the same thing last year, and it didn't happen.
We'll just go ahead and, well, before we talk about the Lakers, I'll talk about the Lakers in a second because they're last on this Christmas slate. We got the Spurs and the Rockets on ESPN at, 8:00 Eastern. The Rockets, again, weird. They drop a game that they shouldn't lose, and then they blow out the Clippers at home in probably their best looking game. There's rumors that Dwight Howard's already unhappy. The Spurs are amazing at home, but on the road, they're like 24-5. They're not exactly struggling on the road either, but they're going to be on the road here against a Houston team that's kind of had their number over the past couple of years. Dwight Howard's always been a matchup nightmare for Tim Duncan. What do you see here with the Spurs and the Rockets? Are you interested in anything here?
No, not really. The Rockets and their 500 ball is just not exciting for me. And, we will mention them later, but Spurs, Howard's a matchup problem for Duncan. Yeah, well, you have Aldridge who can take him now. Mm-hmm. So who's going to stop? Is Clint Capella going to stop Duncan?
You know what I do like about Capella? They're hacking him now because he's playing a lot more minutes. I do like the name Hackapella.
Hackapella.
I think that's way better than Hacka Dwight, Hacka DeAndre, Hacka Andre. Like, it just doesn't roll off the tongue like Hacka Shaq. So I think the next good one is Hackapella. And you don't even have to say Hackapella. You just say Hackapella.
As opposed to Rockapella.
Capella, what does it mean that Capella's playing more? Is it just desperation from J.B. Bickerstaff that they just need motivation because, Terrence Jones hasn't really given him a lot? DeMontis Monteunis has been slow to recover from his injury. What does that say about the Rockets, that they're just looking for any kind of motivation?
No, it's just this kid is continuing to surprise. And, he was barely used in the regular season. He showed up in the playoffs. Now, all of a sudden, he seems to be the only one who could work well with Howard on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Because Terrence Jones and Dwight Howard can't seem to get along too well on the court. They don't seem to mesh too well,
We said that for a while, though. We could tell. I don't think, it's kind of like when Amari got hurt with his knee. And then Carmelo Anthony took over the team in 2012-13 with the Knicks and had an MVP-like season. I felt the same way with James Harden. Dwight Howard getting injured was like the best thing to happen to him. Because now he's the star of the team. They have to run through him because they don't have Dwight to rely on. And they overachieved and Harden had an MVP year. Now with Dwight back, it's kind of like a weird mix. They just, like you said, they don't seem to get along.
Yeah, there were, you know, oh, they fired McHale. He was the problem, right? Wrong.
The problem, though, is with Dwight, they need him. If you're going to be a postseason threat, you need a guy like Dwight Howard. You need an elite rebounder and shot blocker.
Yep, they do, and but that's just not an exciting game. I don't see much.
And then the Clippers play the Lakers.
That one I don't get. That's just, you know, I can say, okay, yes, that's the Kobe retirement Christmas Day, but we all knew the Lakers would be terrible. Why would the NBA schedule a Christmas Day game with them?
Because they're the Lakers.
But I don't even, like, I haven't, unfortunately, been following the ratings, but I even assume people aren't tuning into this.
I mean, look, the Knicks were on Christmas Day last year. That was that game with the Wizards where Quincy Acey decided to try to fight the whole Wizards team.
Well, the Knicks are always on the noon game.
Exactly, but the Lakers have been on that slate since after MJ retired. You know, they had the Lakers on Christmas Day. I think every single year, if I stand corrected.
But this is, there's no need for them to be on tonight. It's just, like, I don't, like, they maybe, you know, I'm just going to get ahead of myself a little bit. You know, who deserves some coal this year for, you know, giving out gifts and the TV networks are getting coal. Because there is no reason we should see the Lakers on TV ever.
Yeah, were they on TNT just recently against the Rockets?
This past Thursday,
yeah.
Yeah, they're on like once a week. And, you know, the cool thing about NBA TV is, you know, they vary their games pretty much and they'll have, you know, fan voting games and whatnot. But they're on NBA TV this Wednesday against Oklahoma City and then Friday. It's like, no, they're terrible teams. They'll lose by 40 both times.
Oh, the Oklahoma City game was so awful. No, Kobe didn't play, but I don't think it mattered. I mean, they looked so, so bad.
No, but the rematch is this coming Wednesday, the 23rd, on NBA TV. And it's just, well, why couldn't we put Utah and Golden State or even Phoenix at Denver for late games? Why do we have to keep watching the
Lakers?
Well,
don't the fans vote? Isn't that fan night when they vote for the games in advance? Or is that maybe Tuesdays?
I think that's Tuesdays. I'm not certain, but, you know,
there's one game every week where NBA TV schedules the game in advance. Now, it's not like NBA TV, I don't really know what their availability is across the spectrum when it comes to, like, Charter and Cox and Time Warner and Dish and Direct and such, but I'm pretty sure that NBA TV, if you have, you know, a second-tier package that's friendly to, like, sports channels, it's pretty likely that more than half of the households have NBA TV.
Yeah, and with ESPN, I'm pretty sure, you know, I don't know. It comes down to probably just, you know, there's no other game to switch to due to contracts and whatnot, but there's just no reason we should be seeing the Lakers on TV and just promoting. It just promotes bad basketball.
The other good thing about the Christmas Day game is that even though they do seem like there's a lot of games, those are the only games that are on. So that means that after on the 26th, we bounce back with just a full slate. I'm counting here, and there's 13 games on the 26th. And then on the 27th, which is next Sunday, you're going to have four more. A couple of interesting ones I see there. It looks like the Grizzlies and the Pacers are going to be coming up again. We're going to have the Heat and the Magic. You're going to have the Cavaliers going to Portland to play the Blazers, CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard, and the Boston and Detroit. Just a couple of interesting things, but let's go ahead and just, it's the season of giving, you know, and we want to give out a couple of awards. You already gave out Cole to all the broadcast networks, so good job by you. because I'm pretty sure they don't really care. And so we're going to talk about a couple of presents that we want to give out to some members of the NBA family, both players, I guess, but mainly teams is what I'm looking at here. Are there any players that you want to give presents to, or you just want to keep it with the teams?
I'm just going to keep with the Cole right now and just double down with Byron Scott.
Okay.
You don't say we need to develop these guys, or, you know, our two touted young people in Russell and Randall. Mm-hmm. And then say, well, they need to learn, and then play Larry Nance Jr. and start him.
And Anthony Brown, who's a second-round pick.
So you can't say we're limiting our young guys because they need to learn, and then you're playing young guys. Like, just, you know, if you're going to tank, just tank. Don't do it, you know, you're just ruining your players, and you're ruining your team, and you're ruining your chemistry for...
If you're going to tank, do it like Minnesota did. Play all your young guys. Let them learn. And if you lose, let them learn to lose. Just don't do it like Philadelphia did, where all you do is lose and you have no stability on your roster.
Well, like Denver. Denver is tanking. They're not really going out winning, making good trades.
But are they tanking? Like, they're competitive. They're not an easy walkthrough every night. Even the Warriors, when they were on their winning streak, had trouble at Denver. You know, they're not the easiest
tanking win. And playing to your very low ceiling.
Uh-huh.
Like Orlando, they didn't tank, but they weren't good to do anything a couple years ago. So, okay, well, let's just play our rookie.
Well, I think the coach was just too dumb to know the difference.
Jacques
Vaughn just didn't know. Whereas Scott Skiles actually has an idea. You know, their defense has really improved, and it's starting to show. Now I think they're still at 500 as we speak. You know, good job by the Orlando Magic. For me, I would give a nice package of Icy Hot to the Chicago Bulls and the Detroit Pistons, who had a 4-overtime game on Friday night that the Pistons eventually won. Everybody had crazy numbers, including Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose had played 50 minutes alongside Jimmy Butler. They came back with there's a little bit of controversy after that we'll talk about in a second with Jimmy Butler. But, I mean, these multiple overtime games, what kind of wear and tear does that do to the bodies of these NBA players in the regular season? Because you get used to the grind, but those are games that definitely stand out, you know, when it comes to these players.
Yeah, and then, you know, you lose the next game terribly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the Warriors gave everything in their double overtime to the Celtics, and then Milwaukee blew them out.
Yeah, and they showed very little effort, to be
honest.
Yeah,
and that's, you know, 4-overtime grades. Like, remember back at college, it was UConn and Syracuse had their
six overtime in the Garden, yeah, in the Big East tournament.
Yeah, and then what happened to that? Oh, you're dead from the end of it.
Yeah,
UConn
got to the Final Four, but Syracuse did look a little bit tired, and they lost to Oklahoma when Blake Griffin was there. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you have these 4-overtime games, and... Okay, well, that's why you hopefully have a deep bench to give some starters some rest, give them 20 minutes. And you notice with that 4-overtime game, 3 overtimes were very close, and okay, 7 points, 4 points, and the last overtime was like a 21 to 17
or something like that.
It was just like everybody had nothing left. And the amazing thing was how, like, Detroit, half their team had already fouled out. So it was just like, they had nothing left, and they lost to the bench.
Let me see if I can look it up. While I stall for the final score here, it was 147-144. First overtime, 11 points, pretty good. Second overtime, 7. Third overtime, 4. Uh-oh, he's slowing down. Overtime number 4, 20-17 Pistons.
Yeah, that was just... Okay,
they just decided, fuck defense, we need to go the fuck home. It was one of those kinds of things. Let me see. 57 minutes for Marcus Morris, even though he only had 20 points and 7 rebounds total, which for, you know, a 57-minute game isn't the greatest. Andre Drummond only played 33 minutes. That must have involved some type of foul trouble because he fouled out. But he had 21 rebounds on top of 33 points. His free throws were 5 for 10, which actually for him is not too shabby. We talked about Jimmy Butler, 55 minutes. Derrick Rose, 54. 43 points for Jimmy Butler. He was on a tear. 15 rebounds for Pau Gasol. 12 rebounds for Taj Gibson. Even though he's struggled a little bit to adapt to Fred Hoiberg's system as well. It was a fun little game. I mean, let me tell you this, Adam. I've seen some multiple overtime games in the NBA and in college that were just the dreads. Like, you watch them and you're just like, man, this game sucks. So when you look at the score, you can't always go by that and say, ooh, that seemed like a fun game. But you got to understand that when you have multiple overtime games, of course the score is going to expand. You know, because you have more opportunities to score. I remember the Nets and the Pistons had a triple overtime game in, what was it, the 04 playoffs? The one where Chauncey Billups hit that half-court shot to tie one of the overtimes.
Yeah.
And it was just a horrible, horrible game. I don't think they cracked 100 until, like, the second or third overtime. You know, I just hate those kinds of games. Do you have a multiple overtime game, playoffs, or regular season that stands out for you, just personally?
That was the Chicago Bulls, Boston Celtics, was the first round of the playoffs?
Yeah, it was 86. The Michael Jordan 63-point game you're talking about?
No, the one like 5 years ago with Nate Robinson and...
Oh, that was the Nets. That was the Bulls and the Nets, the Nate Robinson game in the 2013 playoffs.
Yeah.
Yes. Where Nate just went off on a tear. Darren Williams had a great game. That was one of the... That to me was probably Darren Williams' last great game. That game against the Bulls. For me, the one that really stands out, I'll never forget when the Lakers in 2004 played the Blazers and they had to win that game to win the division so that they could have home court advantage in the next two rounds of the playoffs. Or they would win the division over the Sacramento Kings so that they could get a better seed. Because if they had lost that game, there was a scenario where they may have had to play the Kings in the first round or something like that. So they had to win. Kobe Bryant hit a ridiculous shot over Reuben Patterson with the Kobe stopper, if you remember him. And he was right in his grill, and he drilled a three to get it to overtime. And then in, I think, the second overtime, Kobe hit another crazy three from about 40 feet away right through the net to win the division. And they got to the finals, but they lost to the Pistons. You don't have any regular season ones that really stand out off the top of your head?
It was the 2009 Game 6 Bulls-Celtics triple overtime. That's the Bulls won by one.
That was another playoff one. That was I think Ray Allen had over 50
Ray
in that
Allen
game.
Had 51 points.
Yeah, that the end of that game, I think Joakim Noah got a breakaway dunk for a foul and put that game away. But yeah, that was a fantastic game too.
Because that was the... That was triple overtime, and the two games before that went to overtime.
Yes. Yeah, the first
game. So it was three overtime games in a row.
Game one went to overtime. Game two, Ray Allen hit a three in regulation to win it. Game three was a blowout. Game four went to double overtime. Game five, I think, went to just one overtime. Paul Pierce. I remember Ben Gordon had a great game five. There's a blast from the past, Ben Gordon.
Ben Gordon, I think Rondo had like 30 points that game.
Yeah, he averaged almost a triple double in that series. Derrick Rose had a great series too. He had just gotten the Rookie of the Year trophy, I think, in that game three that was the blowout, and Rondo just totally outplayed Derrick Rose in that game because Rose was a rookie; he was still learning. The only disappointment of that series was that game seven was a little bit. The referees were calling way too many fouls, and it just seemed like a real stop and start type of series. And no Kevin Garnett. If Garnett had played, it probably wouldn't have been as close as it was anyway. But the Celtics not being at full strength was a little bit hard to watch because you knew the Celtics were better than that before Garnett's injury.
Yeah, but nine overtimes in six games.
Yeah, and the Orlando series after that was pretty fun too. That one went seven games also. But we got to stop reminiscing about those things. But man, that is a grind. You know, to play that many overtimes for, you know, the Chicago Bulls, who, we just talked about, have a history of overtimes, and then a Detroit Pistons team that's coming on up. The Bulls, like you said, followed through with a really ugly loss in the Garden against the New York Knicks. And Jimmy Butler went off saying that the head coach, Fred Hoiberg, needs to coach harder. Is that a proper criticism from a star player, or is that just the lay of the land in the NBA where a star player can mouth off, but a role player can't?
Well, think about it. Who was the previous coach? A very hard coach on his players.
Yeah, but the criticism was that he was hard. The criticism of Tom Thibodeau was that he was hard on them.
But the players didn't... If the players, if they adapt to them, they're used to that. And don't forget, this is the exact same team year in and year out. So they're like... Obviously, there wasn't a player revolt where all the players quit, and they need that player-friendly coach to be like, okay, I'm your buddy, yay. It's, well, maybe, you know, we need to be coached harder. You need to, you know, come on, don't be our friend, be our coach.
But isn't that the reason why Fred Hoiberg was brought there in the first place? You want to change it? Like, and it's like in basketball or in football. Like, you get an offensive coach, it doesn't work, you fire him. You get a defensively minded coach, you try to change the culture. That's the idea. That's why you're getting rid of the guy in the first place. What it seems like in Chicago is that they didn't want to change the culture. They just wanted to get rid of the coach because it was a personal thing. And now you're bringing in a guy who doesn't fit the system that you want, And the players are slowly starting to revolt, at least verbally. So I'm sure there's a way to kind of get things back to square one between Hoiberg and Chicago and the Chicago Bulls team. I don't think it's gotten that bad yet. But what has to be done? Where does the rubber meet the road here? Who's the one that has to adjust?
I think it might be a trade or two. Bring in a fresh face or two.
Well, you can't trade Jimmy Butler.
Well, I mean, why would you? You know, you can't trade him, but they have a front court logjam. I noticed our boy Bobby Portis put up very impressive numbers quite recently.
Yeah, but would that be considered garbage time? The next game, 22-11. One way or another, a good game's a good game.
It's a good game from a rookie who's been getting DNPs all season. You have Noah, who's been angry on the bench. He's been starting. You have
more Tony Snell. Yeah.
Yeah, you have a lot of, maybe it just takes, like, look, this team is too, we've gotten as far as we can. Maybe we need a new fresh face in here. Because the players aren't going to change at this point, because we're already at this deep in the season where they haven't, it's 25 games in? 30 games?
We're 25 games in, I believe.
Yeah, 25 games in. They haven't bought into the coach's system. You're supposed to buy in by, like, game 10.
Mm-hmm.
Where now you know how everything is run, you've seen all the scenarios, you've seen enough different teams to know how to prepare sort of for different things. Not looking too good. What will change it? A big winning streak, that changes everything, but not a good look for them so far.
Yeah, they're at 15-10, which is the same record as the Miami Heat right now. The three other teams ahead of them are Toronto, Indiana, and Cleveland. I'm pretty safe to say, unless there's like a really bad injury, Cleveland's going to probably just stay ahead for good. Pacers look really good. We'll talk about them a little bit later. And then the Magic are right behind them, along with the Charlotte Hornets, who have really surged all of a sudden. And then the Pistons team that they battled at in that four overtime game with. All of a sudden, I'm looking here at them, and I don't see the Atlanta Hawks. They're right on the outside. Right, they're right ahead of the Celtics, but they're not in the playoff picture because they're not in the last spot.
So can I give out more coal to the coach slash?
Boy, you're just giving out a lot of coal.
I have some non-coal gifts too, but coaches slash GMs, pick one job and do it. The only one who seems to be doing it right is Van Gundy.
Yeah, even Greg Popovich is not a coach GM. He was a coach GM and he rescinded the duties to R.C. Buford. Many, many years ago, and it really worked out where, you know, they have a good connection, but there's a reason why somebody is on a managerial role and the other one is on a coaching role. There's a reason why these things happen.
Yeah, you can't spend your day focusing on the team and then your night focusing on the outside league. You need to just, you know, you're spreading yourself too thin, and Atlanta, They sort of did what they did with the salary cap constraints. They couldn't sign everybody, but you know the teams got better around them, and they did nothing to improve. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with the Clippers. What's the Clippers' problem? Their bench is garbage, even though they got a whole new bench.
But we talked about this, I think, the previous episode with Doc Rivers. You can't fire yourself. You know, there's just got to be a point where you say to yourself, "Okay, I need some help here. I need to focus on, you know, being a coach and let somebody else, you know, shop for the groceries, you know, if you will." But, you know, it's like when you have movie stars that, you know, they get to be at such a level that they want to write a movie, they want to produce a movie, they want to direct a movie. I mean, every single famous movie star has probably started a movie that they themselves either wrote or directed. And sometimes it works out really well if you have the chops. You know, but not all these coaches have the chops to evaluate the same talent that they're trying to teach on the court. It's not the same thing. You have to be able to have that eye as an outsider, not somebody in the trenches, in the huddle, to say, okay, who would be a really good fit here? And it feels like with Atlanta, they've had a couple of decent makes with guys like, you know, Kent Bazemore working out okay, Tiago Splitter working out okay, but they weren't home run hits, and I feel like losing Danny Ferry was a big loss for them.
Yep, that really hurt, because Ferry was the one who, you know, he blew up the team. He got somebody to take Joe Johnson. He got rid of Josh Smith.
But what's worse? Having a coach GM that, you know, that might not be able to handle both roles, but you'll still get a good coach at the end of the day, or a really lackadaisical or sort of apathetic type of GM, like a Del Demps in New Orleans or a Billy King in Brooklyn. What's worse?
The worst is having the player coach. If you have an apathetic GM, mm-hmm. well, things can change. If you have the coach / GM, your team starts suffering for years to come. A new GM could come in and just clear house immediately. There's, as we've seen, the fact that Gerald Wallace could get traded not once but twice
yes.
this past offseason. I mean, somebody will take any bad contract as long as you're willing to take something in return. Yeah. So you can get a new GM, but if you have, you know, the coach like, nope, I'm not giving up my power, I'm not giving up my GM power, everything's good, your team just gets older, and, you know, is it worth as a Billy King who just makes bad trades, or is it somebody like Memphis who just keeps standing pat, you know, Chicago, standing pat every year, and all you're doing is just getting older?
Yeah, the other one that we didn't talk about was Stan Van Gundy, but, you know, I think it's working out okay with Stan because I think he does have a good head on his shoulders, and he's been away from the game long enough that I think he can treat the team as if he was an office guy and still be able to coach the team up, if that makes any sense.
Well, that his window is then closing because now he knows all these players, and all his signings have been complete mysteries, and we haven't been like, that makes sense on any of them.
Yeah.
But now it's going to be, well, okay, these new players are coming in. You're not knowing too much about them now.
I don't know about Morris yet. You know, we just talked about the line that they had in that 4 overtime game. But Ersan Ilyasova has been a great fit because even though they haven't taken that many threes, a lot of people expect when Stan got there, he's been a real improvement for them. The guy who's really been the one that's really spearheaded that team alongside Drummond is Reggie Jackson. When he got his extension, a lot of people were poo-pooing on it. I remember John Wall had those comments saying that he was getting paid as much as Reggie Jackson. And he's kind of said it like an insult, but Jackson has been fantastic. You know, I don't really know how else to say it. I would actually throw a nice little present to him, maybe a little four leaf clover, because he's had a lot of luck on his side for at least the beginning of the season.
Bizarre signings, bizarre moves, but they've all been sort of paying off for now.
Yeah,
so all right, moving on to presents. What's your next one?
For me, I would give a nice, fluffy welcome mat to the San Antonio Spurs because there is no place like home at the AT&T Center for San Antonio. That team does not lose at home. They are undefeated. They've had great home records throughout their history with Popovich and Duncan and Ginobili and Parker there. Since the AT&T Center opened, really, because they started that building in 2002-2003 season. That was the year they won the title after the Lakers had their three-peat. They've been a great home team so far, but remember why they lost in the playoffs to the Clippers. They lost two home games, you know, and so I think that they realize, okay, we need to protect our home court, and even if we can't catch the Warriors, if we just win at home and we steal one on the road, that's going to be good enough for us. But there's no guarantees there. You know, every game is a story in the playoffs. But what does it say about the home dominance for the Spurs? Is it them sort of getting back to basics where they've been slowing things down? They're more defensively predicated now than they were in the past, playing a lot more big boy ball with Duncan and LaMarcus Aldridge. Do you feel like they're sort of kind of returning to form as kind of the same old Spurs who, you know, but just a lot stronger at home?
Well, it took a while to get Aldridge into the mix because, as we saw, the first few games, like, well, they seem sort of clunky and out of place. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's there are some teams like the Clippers who are building themselves up for we're going to win on the road. We know we have to.
I was going to ask you that. Do you feel like the Clippers are sort of psyching themselves out so that they procrastinate after the All-Star break and they get on a roll?
It seems to be their mentality is we're just going to be like the Wizards and
old time Phil Jackson Lakers style, you know.
Yeah,
we'll be all right. We'll be all right.
All we need to do is get in the playoffs. You guys need to win on the road. because that's where you're going to be. That's where it's going to end up, not here.
But that's the funny part. That's what happened with the Spurs, and everyone's like, wait for the rodeo trip. They'll be all right. They'll be all right. And they struggled on the rodeo. When we talk about the rodeo trip, we talk about the time between January and February where they go like on a, what is it, like a 10 or 11 game road trip?
Yeah.
And what, because they because the rodeo's in town.
The rodeo's in town for like 17 days.
Exactly. So. And so they, you have a couple, you have a little tough stretch there where you have a couple of back-to-backs on the road, and you're bound to play a couple of good teams in a row. And they struggled on their road trip last year, and they didn't really recover from it in time. They didn't get home court in the playoffs in the first round, and it cost them. Do you feel like they're trying to right that wrong this year because they can't be complacent?
Pretty much.
It's funny. The Spurs are so they're so transcendent. They've played very aggressively this season, but they seem complacent at the same time because it's the Spurs. Like, it's almost like the New England Patriots of the NBA. They just, no matter what you do against the Spurs, you can't speed them up, but you'll never match their aggression. You'll never match their strategy.
Yeah, it's they're not there to go 100 miles down the highway. They're just going to go at their speed and stay in their lane, but, you know, don't try to muscle in on them. It's just...
Yeah, I said aggression. I meant discipline. I'm sorry about that.
This is what we do. We're going to do this well. We're just going to... We're down 20. All right, we'll just keep doing what we do, and we'll bounce back from that.
Do you have any other gifts that you'd like to give out? You got to give something nice. You're just giving up nothing but coal.
Well, most of the
you're like that. What's that movie they just made? Krampus. You know, I didn't know Krampus was a real thing until like I watched the movie and they said, "Yeah, Krampus is real."
Yeah, Krampus is a real German.
I had no idea.
German origin.
Have you ever? Did anybody ever tell you that Krampus was coming to ruin your day?
No, but we knew the story. One thing I've never heard of ever, it was this Elf on a Shelf.
Okay, my wife loves Elf on the Shelf. She's the one that goes on Facebook and looks for the creative Elf on the Shelves. And there's some really good ones. There's this one where they take like a snowman, or no, they take Olaf and they put him on a cheese grater, and they put little like sugar cubes at the bottom that look like they're shredding them Fargo style.
But when did this start?
It's been around for at least 5 or 6 years, at least.
Okay, so I'm like, it wasn't around when we were kids, and just I've never heard.
Now,
of it.
I think that's something where social media, and did I say social media?
Social media. Perhaps,
that's like the Danish version of social media. I think that with Instagram and all those things where people can post their cute little pictures and quilts and all the creative stuff that they make up, that when they started showing pictures of Elf on a Shelf, people were like, oh, that's really neat, I want to do that too. Spotify is another one. You know, and I think that's one of the reasons why it sort of blew up, if you know, for lack of a better word.
Spotify?
What is Spotify?
Spotify is music. You make your own little radio channels.
Okay, moving on.
all right, a sharp, a crisp, fresh suit goes to Danilo Gallinari, who is just styling right now.
He's got nice hair, too.
He is having a career, his numbers are career highs across the board right now on you know, the surprising Denver Nuggets, because they're not like 3-30 as we sort of expected.
Let me see if he is
averaging 17.3, 6 rebounds, almost 3 assists.
The 3 assists has to be a career high. I know the 17 is not, because I know the other reason why it's really great for Danilo is that he's had 2 ACL injuries. You know, he got hurt right in the middle of late in the 2013 season, where, you know, everybody was talking about the Miami Heat's winning streak at the time, the 27-game winning streak, and it's amazing. But the Denver Nuggets, I think, at the same time were on, like, what, an 18-game winning streak under George Karl? And right around that time, or maybe right after it, Gallinari tore his ACL. The Nuggets lost to the Warriors, who were coming on up, and then they fired Karl, and they were never the same. Gallinari tore his ACL again. I think it was in the 2014, right before the 2014 season started, or maybe at the start of it. And he was slow to come back in 2015, but he had a couple of 40-point games. He's one of these guys that can explode on you if he's making threes, you know, and he's hitting that little Dirk shot. He's got the Dirk shot down, too.
Yeah, he does, but he is just, like, again, he's having a very amazing season. Mm-hmm. The same thing with Andre Drummond, who just gets, you know, a big old beast mode.
Now, the only thing I worry about with Gallinari is that he's shooting 39% from the field. That's not good. That means you're hoisting a lot of shots. But if you're going to be a slow tank type of team, like you say with Denver, that's okay. You know, let Gallinari take his shots and hoist them up. Let Emmanuel Mudiay learn. Let Kenneth Faried learn. It's okay. It's okay to lose if you have your best players on the court.
And if he's jacking up, they're usually, you know, you ran the clock down and you're in a bad position, so you just got to hurl one up anyways.
What are the chances that Gallinari, you hear his name in trade talk?
It's already there.
Yeah, but they would have to give up quite a bit right now for Gallinari, I would say.
Well, that's the talk is now the Celtics should just give up one of their picks to get him, give up the Brooklyn pick.
A pick won't be good enough to get him. They would have to give a pick and a good player, like an Evan Turner, if you could call Evan Turner a good player.
Evan Turner and the Brooklyn pick for Gallinari is what?
That's a fair deal. Well, you know what? Let's do that right now.
Well, the problem is the team like the Celtics, they need a big man. Also, given another gift of positivity, a little glass of the Fountain of Youth to Kyle Lowry.
Well, do you think that has a? Do you think the weight loss? Because
okay,
here's the thing: we hear a lot of people saying, "Man, I got a lot of muscle on me," you know, in the training camp stuff, where I lost a lot of weight. But this is one that actually stands up. I feel like the weight loss really did help Kyle Lowry.
Did you know he's leading the league in steals right now?
No, I did not.
He is leading the league in steals, and I think he's top three or four in 3 points made.
Now, three-pointer percentage, he's always been good. Now, last year, he was at 35%.
Well, percentage, you can't count percentage because you have...
Yeah, but if you watch the Raptors play, he hoists a lot of shots.
Kyle Lowry is third in three-point field goals with 80. Mm-hmm. His percentage...
You can't follow him because he's an 87% free throw shooter.
Yeah, and 2.4 steals per game. Just above Westbrook.
The only thing that scares me is that his 3-point percentage is only 3 points less than his field goal percentage, which means he's taking a lot of shots, but he's a good 3-point shooter.
There's with that new defensive minded team, and you're getting Bismack Biyombo, and you don't have
Valanciunas has been banged up a little bit, but they've played well without him so far. DeRozan has had a problem. It's safe to say DeRozan's had an all-star year. Am I right? An all-star season?
Yeah, it's...
Him and Lowry both.
We were waiting for it to happen, and it did happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were waiting for the dynamic duo, you know, in Toronto. We just didn't know what combination would it be. Would it be, like, DeRozan and Valanciunas? Would it be, you know, I mean, this is really far-fetched, but was it going to be, you know, Terrence Ross and Kyle Lowry? No one really knew what it was, but it turns out it's Lowry and it's DeRozan. That's where the money is, and they're really showing up right now. For me, I would give the Memphis Grizzlies some of that, like, infomercial age-reverse cream, because... That team, I think it's over for them. I think they need a facelift. They're not totally, the wheels have not come off yet for Memphis, but the bearings are starting to get really, really rusty.
There's a lot of rust on that car. At the beginning of the, you're going to see some ugly smoke coming out of it. You're like, maybe you should, when you go to the shop, nah, it's still good.
In the wintertime, that's even worse, you know. For the Memphis Grizzlies, you know, they did have the win against the Pacers just recently, but then bad loss to the Dallas Mavericks, and then they followed that one up with, or they had that one before, they had another bad loss to the Chicago Bulls. They have Zach Randolph coming off of the bench, and he voluntarily did it. There's no controversy there. He did it because he knows he's not playing well. Is it almost over for Zeebo? Like, his contract's coming up.
It's over in the, you're not going to make as much as you did. You now need to go to the bench.
Or
you're
do you think
Zeebo
is biding his time? Now, I don't think Dave Joerger is built that way. And with all the scrutiny he's had, I don't see him being, oh, yeah, we're just going to play Zach Randolph 30 minutes and we'll be all right. I think this is something where it's a permanent problem. I don't think that they're biding their time necessarily.
On that team, it's a problem, but... if he went to like a contender and played 25 minutes off the, you know, that Joakim Noah role, he would just be unstoppable.
I disagree. I think that he's the type of player where if you shrink his minutes, he's not as effective. Kind of like an Amari Stoudemire type of deal. You either go all in with Z-Bo or you get nothing.
I think, no, I just, you know, watching Memphis, it's just spacing is a problem with him and Gasol now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you move him to the second unit where he can have all the space he needs,
yeah,
I don't think it's a matter of minutes. I just think it's who's around you. That's why I'm saying if you put him 25 minutes, he's the captain of the second unit. You know, not have
kind of like what David West is doing in San Antonio. Now, David West is not lighting the world on fire in San Antonio. Okay, he's got career lows, and he's had career lows. But he's a decent veteran leader. Is that something that you would envision for Randolph if he had to go to another team?
Basically, and you know, to have that, because usually the second unit captain is your shooter and your come. But if you have that grind him out, you know, don't. We're not going to try to come back by 30. We're just going to slow the game down to give our starters some, you know, nice, give our big guys a breather. I think he could be very effective in the right role. However, doing that over 40 minutes is sort of out of the question for that.
You have one more present?
I got one more present, which is just, you know, he must have a garden of four-leaf clovers.
Uh-huh.
But this is just a miracle grow for his four leaf clover, or just his his magic mirror. But Larry Bird,
okay,
getting Monta Ellis, moving Paul George to the four where he is just woefully undersized.
Yeah, but I'll get to him in a second. I wanted to save him for something else. But you can go ahead and talk about him. But is he really a four? He still plays the small forward to me.
He plays the small forward, but you're putting CJ Miles out at the three, so you have a...
And Roddy Stuckey at the two guard. Yeah.
Stuckey, Ellis, Hill.
So yeah, and so if you go by, you know, one through five on the court, yeah, I agree with you. They
and
put the, in the
to think
well.
That roster would work is absolutely amazing, and I can't tell with this team what is going on. You know, the only real trade you have is Ian Mahimi coming in, and all of a sudden, this team is the number two team. You know, do they have enough to take up Cleveland? Probably not. I don't think anybody really has enough to take up Cleveland.
It would be really hard for them, but they're going to have some battles. I mean, I'm sure they played already earlier in the year, but, I mean, that's a divisional rivalry game. I know people are saying, well, divisions don't matter in the playoff seedings anymore. No, but they matter to the teams. They do.
And for him to assemble that roster with just huge question marks,
mm-hmm.
from, you know, basically just a lot from me, but, you know, to have a dom- – they're a solid two. And not like, oh, well, maybe the Raptors or Heat or Bulls.
So you
no.
would say they are clearly the second best team in the East, ahead of Toronto, ahead of Miami, ahead of the Bulls.
Clearly the second best team.
Okay. My last gift, I would give a daily newspaper to every team in the Western Conference because they need to stay. Here's the thing. It's cool. It's almost become the in thing to just say, oh, the Western Conference is so tough. And it is really tough. There's a lot of really good talented teams with all-star players up and down the roster in the Western Conference, and that is true. But there's a point where you need to stop making it an excuse for losing playing 500 ball for 2 or 3 months. You know, so you look at the Western Conference, okay? The Golden State Warriors are, you know, world beaters. The Spurs, we already talked about them. They're at 23-5. The Thunder are starting to click. They're at 18-9. Then look at it, Adam. The Clippers are 16-12. The Mavericks, who are surging, are 15-12. The Grizzlies are 15-14 with all their struggles. The Rockets are at 500, like you said. The Jazz, the Suns, and the Blazers, the Nuggets, are all losing teams. Some of these teams are really, really tough, and some of these teams were supposed to be a lot better than people expected. I look at the Eastern Conference, I see at least 10 teams that are above 500 right now, whereas in the West, I see only 6. At what point does the Western Conference teams have to look themselves in the mirror and say, okay, we can't just use that as an excuse to be 500. We've got to be better than that.
Well, that's sort of like, you know, the college football, the landscape of, we're the SEC, we're number one. Yeah, but you're Texas A&M. You're just going to go 8-4.
Yeah, you're still losing three or four games a conference.
You know,
play.
You're Kentucky. You're going to go 5-6, and you'll be lucky to make a bowl. You can't call SEC when you're on the bottom of the conference. And you have, you know, a team like Dallas, who was supposed to be terrible, who are better than a lot more established teams with more all-star rosters. That doesn't really say much about it. And then you have, you know, previous, you have, you know, you're, well, we're the West, we have all our tough guys here. But yeah, like, you know, the theme of the day, where you're getting older, you're getting older, you're getting older, younger guys are hungry. So the East is a lot of hungry teams, and they're going out beating the West out West.
Do you think it's a little bit of reverse psychology where, you know, Western Conference teams are told, oh, your teams are so, your conference is so tough, and they don't, but they, so they take it for granted that they can drop a couple of games because of how competitive it is and how they know the other teams are going to lose games. And then in the Eastern Conference, you're told for two or three seasons, oh, your conference sucks, you could have a 500 record. And you surge because you know that if you're just that much better, that you might be able to secure yourself a playoff spot.
Well, it's the old arms race. Mm-hmm. The West, you know, like, you know, was it 3 years ago, 4 years ago, maybe, they all started to buy up all the good players from the East.
Mm-hmm.
Here, we don't need our draft picks. We need this guy who's 32 and has one or two good years left.
Yes.
Okay, he's gone. Now you have no replacement for him. That guy in the East is starting to do a little good right now. We're starting to see, you know, all those players on the Magic start to flourish. And
Where's the balance of power with the West and the East right now? They don't play, the West and the East play each other in the All-Star game, but that's just pomp and circumstance. In the finals, two teams play each other and that's it. So when you do the West versus East argument, it's a little silly because there's really nothing to argue outside of maybe head-to-head matchups. Where's the balance of power right now between the West and the East in your eyes?
The balance of power is obviously with the East because the East is trending upwards.
Mm-hmm.
The West right now still is better.
So you'd say the West is underachieving?
The West is just, you know, let's just look at your Pelicans to Sacramento to, you know, the All-Stars, you know, Phoenix bought in, and, you know, we got Tyson Chandler and Brandon Knight. We put a lot of money in on them. The Rockets were supposed to be a title contender. This is supposed to be the Jazz's year to make the playoffs. And
yeah.
Memphis was supposed to be tough. Yeah, but they're all going downwards.
Yeah, and I think it's safe to say that for the Pelicans, it's over. I think we can. You think it's safe to call it?
Well, you should.
At 7-19?
You should call it. Just, you know, trade away some nice, trade away your pieces, go for next year. Start fresh with the...
Unbelievably, it is not over yet for Sacramento and Minnesota at 10-16 apiece. It's not over yet.
Well, that's what we said with as long as you have George Karl, your teams are overachieving. And, you know, with Rondo's, you know, mouth aside, he's leading the league in assists.
Rondo has been spectacular. That was a really awful thing that he did do. And he knew what he did. You know, the slanderous comment that he had made to that referee, Billy Kennedy, who then and then later came out as gay. But he obviously knew what button he was going to push. I mean, you saw Rondo in Boston. You read the beat writers. I mean, this is something that's typical of Rondo, where he just kind of jabs at people.
Yeah, it was, you know, we're just going to just awkwardly skip by it. But he, you know, yeah. This is like, I think Bill Simmons said, like, this was the first PR battle the NBA can't win.
Yes.
And pretty much, yeah, screwed up big time.
Well, not only that, he tweeted an apology, and then they had to clean it up, and he had to make a statement of an apology.
Well, he should have probably, the apology was, like, so fake, and it was just...
That they had to do a real apology. Yeah,
yeah, I was just waiting for the press, okay, let's show them hanging out and going to the theme park together and riding the roller coasters, and, mm-hmm. you know, I was waiting for that to happen, but, you know, for the most part, when Cousins, you know, he had that unfortunate, he was out for a few games.
Did you see DeMarcus Cousins' manager get into a little bit of a tussle with Jason Terry.
Yeah.
Another example of fans getting a little too close to the action when it spills.
That's just, you know, again, you have to put solid people around you, and he hasn't, you know, that's the question, is when is Sacramento going to sort of realize?
Well, there is history there, am I right? When Jason Terry was traded to the Kings, he refused to play there. Do you think that may have been some part of it?
Oh, who knows? Apparently everybody has egos, and everybody doesn't forget anything in that league, but... You know, just to get back on topic, we have, you know, the resurgent Knicks with Porzingis, who slowed down, as I sort of expected, but looking fresh. And who can we say on Dallas is that young superstar up-and-comer? Who's that one on Houston? Terrence Jones? Well, okay, we could say Clint Capella. But Grizzlies, who do they have? Thunder, who do they have?
That's one of the problems with the Grizzlies, and someone on the show had mentioned it, on a previous show had mentioned it. They just don't have any of those young pieces together. They just don't. And the trade that they made was for Mario Chalmers, who's an older veteran point guard. They don't really have younger guys. They traded Jarnell Stokes in that Mario Chalmers trade. You know, who else do you have? Jordan Adams? You know, Jarrell Martin, who, you know, had a foot injury. They just don't, they don't have that next generation when a Zebo starts to slip, or when a Tony Allen, like he is right now, starts to slip. And I think that's one of the reasons for their pitfalls.
You know, the Clippers have given away all their first...
They went for broke. The Clippers went for broke.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is you wanted to win now... You know, a couple years ago, and it's not happening. So, you need a young infusion of talent,
yes,
in order to keep yourself relevant, and that's why the Western is going down. Because outside of Clint Capella, the jury's really out on Terrence Jones. This was supposed to be his breakout year, and
yeah, the Rockets are a bit of an enigma, because I mean, you look at the Mavericks, they're older. The Grizzlies all across the board are older. The Clippers are older. You know, but if you look at the Thunder, the Spurs, and the Warriors, they have a nice mixture of experience and youth. So do the Rockets. That's why their lack of success is so puzzling. It just doesn't seem to make sense.
Well, the thing is, even with the Thunder, we can't even say young talent anymore.
Yeah, but Kawhi Leonard is like, what, 24?
Thunder.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, the Thunder. I mean, Enes Kanter's pretty young still. Steven Adams is there, you know, the mustache duo. And then
but they're also platooning them and splitting time.
Yeah, Andre Robertson is playing a lot of minutes, which I still don't get. And then you have a couple of other ones. Now, you have your veterans, like DJ Augustin is there. And I can't believe we're at a point where we're calling DJ Augustin a veteran, but that's just...
Well, you know, they had all these picks, and none of those picks panned out. Mm-hmm. That's why you had to get Kanter. That's why you tried to get Dion Waiters.
Brought in Mitch McGarry, yeah.
Josh Eustace was just...
that was a throwaway first-round pick. The first-ever throwaway first-round pick in the NBA in many years. Yeah.
What a horrible pick, but, you know, we have Durant now, who came off a big injury, so you don't... You know, his upside is now... been stymied by a year. Mm-hmm. Westbrook is getting older. He's still young, but what happened, you know, if he gets an injury...
Yeah, you don't want to see a Kevin Johnson scenario where he's amazing and then his legs go out and he's done.
That's more like a Penny Hardaway situation.
Yeah, KJ. Well, who fell faster, KJ or Penny Hardaway? KJ was literally out of the league in 2 years. He went from scoring 50 points on the Rockets in a Game 7 to being out of the league 2 years later. Penny Hardaway was weird. He tore his ACL like the year after Shaq left, but he still had a couple of decent seasons, including the lockout-shortened season in 99, and then when he signed with the Suns, he was just never the same.
He was never the same, but Penny went from being in Nike commercials to just, you know, KJ fell from all-star, but if you're going from superstar status, that's a... Deep.
Yeah, because Grant Hill ain't fair, because even with the foot injury, Grant Hill was still awesome. You know, it was just when he signed with the Magic after, what was that? Was that after his maybe fifth or sixth season in the NBA? That's when it fell off the rails for him, unfortunately.
And yes, I know I'll get some trouble by saying both Durant and Westbrook are getting older, even though they're both 27.
Yeah.
But That's 27 with mileage. That's not 27 back in the day.
Oh, man, they have worn them down so much. And, I mean, for Russell Westbrook, I don't blame you. When you have a player that great, you've got to play him, you know. Let's just do the, very quickly, give me someone for the naughty list and give me somebody for the nice list.
Oh, naughty list is, I'm just going to pick an easy one. I'm not going to go too deep in the barrel, and that's just Al Jefferson, who is apparently just trying to get himself out of the league as fast as possible with, you know, oh, it's a 4-game suspension, but that's your third offense, so.
That, it's odd, well, first of all, he said it was a mistake. It's like, no, that's not a mistake. I think Jalen Rose has said this, and I agree. That's not a mistake. That's a decision. You decided that you wanted to smoke marijuana instead of play basketball because you knew you knew if you drug tested that you were probably going to get caught. You got caught three times now.
You know, his DUI in Minnesota, that's a mistake. That's just a, oh, I should have called a cab.
Yeah.
This is a, oh, man, I accidentally smoked it and kept inhaling repeatedly. And, you know, that's just pure, like, okay.
Yeah, and we don't know how fervent the drug test policy in the NBA is, but there's a pretty good idea that in a certain 3 or 4 month frame, you're probably going to get tested. You know, you need to be ready.
It seems with the players and the stories and, you know, hearing from, like, Rodman, it's like, oh, yeah, there was ways to get around it quite easily, and you knew it was coming. It was never, you know, it was never much of a shock.
For my naughty list, I would say Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's averaging 3.6 fouls per game. Maybe he's just one of those kind of Crash Davis type of players where he just kind of goes all in. He's super aggressive, but he doesn't really hone in his skills. He's got the same exact numbers almost as last season. 15.6 points a game, 6.7 rebounds, 2.9 assists. His three-point percentage is still at 29%. I've seen him commit a couple of really ugly fouls where he got a little too physical. Russell Westbrook's super aggressive, but he's also really smart. He knows when to pick his spots. With Giannis, I mean, I don't know if he's ever going to get it.
Well, that just sort of shows he really does know nothing about basketball, and maybe Jason Kidd should get an assistant coach like a Tayshaun Prince to sit next to him and be like, this is how you play, as opposed to go, you're athletic, go be athletic.
I think he's just truly just one of those kind of as the team goes, the player goes, where if the Bucks are struggling, Giannis does, but if the Bucks are thriving, Giannis thrives. It's one of those kinds of things.
All right, and who do you have for your...
You didn't give me a nice player yet. Someone
for
nice
gonna, I was gonna let you start.
Oh, okay. I got to go with Paul George. I mean, what a great story. You know, it's not like Paul George had to overcome so many obstacles to get to where he was. I'm sure all the NBA players have to, and NBA superstars have to get to a certain point. In order to get to a certain point, they have to overcome so many things. But for Paul George to come back from that ugly, ugly broken leg, and not only be great, but be like the best, like one of the five best small forwards in the NBA when the small forward position is richer than maybe ever. That's incredible. You know, I mean, he has got MVP. If Steph Curry did not exist on this planet, Paul George is the league MVP.
Well, there's the Eastern Conference MVP.
The Eastern Conference Player of the Month, you know, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, which you can. I mean, it's him and LeBron. LeBron's still doing LeBron things. You know, he's still one of the best. I mean, we could talk forever, because we've seen this discussion about who's the face of the NBA, and everyone's saying it's Steph Curry, and I don't disagree. Would you have any problem with that?
No, I wouldn't.
You would say Curry?
Most improved?
Well, the follow-through and the mug face when he hits a three, do you think that's kind of like the image of what the NBA basketball is now? Steph Curry.
Yeah, sort of the way it's...
I mean, LeBron is still LeBron. I mean, it's kind of like when Duncan and Kobe were on the rise, but Shaq was still Shaq. You know, it was like, I'm still the man here. You know, it took a little while for him to come down. And with LeBron, he's still the best. I mean, we're just really in a golden age right now, and where you just got elite, Hall of Fame-worthy talent across the board, from point guard to small forward. I think the only one where we're really just lacking it is at the center position, but we've got great rebounding centers now. You know, but the thing is, with Paul George, I don't know if he's a Hall of Fame player yet. He's still very early in his career. I'm just very glad, and it's very nice to see that his injury did not ruin his career the way it did to Derrick Rose.
All right. I'll give you one for each conference, since I gave out coal to everybody else.
Okay.
All right. For the Eastern Conference, I will go with Reggie Jackson.
Okay.
because, you know, he left Oklahoma City not on the best of terms, but he's been sort of behaved and he sort of grew up a little bit.
Yeah, did you see Westbrook when they asked him about Reggie Jackson said, who?
Yeah, is he the third best player in Detroit right now or something?
Yeah.
You know, and, like, that just shows, like, well, Oklahoma City hasn't moved on, and maybe that's sort of why you're studying, you know, okay, you said they found a rhythm, but they were sort of iffy to start off the season. And Jack's just been scoring and really...
He's been a leader. He's been a leader in the backcourt for them, for sure.
He's been a quiet leader.
It's kind of like a mini Carmelo Anthony, Amare type of deal like we were talking about in James Harden, Dwight Howard thing, where when Brandon Jennings comes back, I don't know if they really have room for him. Would you agree?
They don't have room for him, but do they really need room for him?
Well, he's coming back. He's already on the D-League roster.
Yeah, he's coming back, but you have now a sixth man who can play the one or the two.
If he's efficient like he was before the injury, yes. If he goes back to same old Brandon Jennings, no. That's the problem.
But if he goes back to the same old Brandon Jennings, you're the sixth man, so you can just get 25 minutes.
Oh, like become a new Deion Waiters, basically.
Yeah. if you could thrive and then make your team deeper, or you could just be like, well, you got 20 minutes, we'll hope somebody takes you.
And you got one for the Western Conference?
Would be C.J. McCollum. Never complained, he didn't get playing time, just waited, practiced hard, bided his time, and now all of a sudden, he's out of nowhere and probably will get the Most Improved Player Award.
Is McCollum at Lehigh one of these things where, after the fact, it seems so abundantly obvious that he was a great player? And that people just refused to watch him because he was of the jersey he wore? Is it really that simple that if you don't wear a big time school uni, nobody knows who you are?
No, because there are tons of players who get drafted by small schools way too high, mm-hmm. and then they fizzle out. You hear nothing from them. Like, let's just go Jason Thompson and Ryder. He just became perfectly mediocre.
So how much credit belongs to Neil O'Shea for finding Lillard and for finding McCollum?
I would give him no credit. I was debating between little and no credit because he doubled down on the same position, the same player, and
struck gold.
McCollum did nothing for 2 years. Lillard, the talk on him was he was always dominant. It was just like, well, he played nobody, and how can he do? But there was never, you know, McCollum didn't have that. He didn't have that notoriety to begin with.
He is by far the most improved player in the league, right? I mean, yeah. They should just etch MIP for him.
He's penciled in my book right now.
Here's the one problem I have with McCollum. What has set him apart from Lillard? Like, what makes him different? Because when I watch him, I think what their appeal is that you could put one on the bench and it's like having another one. I'm not saying that C.J. McCollum is just as good as Damian Lillard, because they do play a little differently, but don't they seem very, very similar in style?
No, because Damian Lillard has more of that Deron Williams, I will try to bowl you over,
mm-hmm.
that Russell Westbrook mentality of I can become a running back if I need to.
So the similarities really come with the three-point shooting.
That's just it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a shooting, but McCollum seems to be more of a finesse player, whereas Lillard seems more of I'll just, you know, if yeah. I need to, I will run into you.
McCollum is a blessed jump shooter. He's one of these guys where, you know, he can even do it off of one leg if he has to, and he could just sink a jump shot from anywhere. He's just that kind of talent. He's just got that kind of, like, blessed talent as a shooter. You know,
but you don't hear about that with other, you know, like Dennis Schroeder. He's developing, but he's like, I want to be a starter.
Which he is now, I believe, because Jeff Teague's has had some injury troubles, I believe.
But you know, he's now going to the media, and he's, you know, now creating a little storylines. You never heard anything from this kid. It was just like, oh, he must just be another, you know, first-round Blazers bust, as they had a ton of them.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, oh, he can play. And is it much on him? As so much he sat for 2 years and got to practice his jump shot every day. And he did it. And it pays off now.
And that's going to be wrapping it up. Do you have any gifts for me?
You are on the nice list.
I'm on the nice list. That's the only gift I get.
Would you rather have coal?
Well, because I don't ever see coal down south unless you go way, way down the road. Then, maybe some coal will be good. You know.
Okay.
How do you actually deliver coal? Like, you would have to, like, just put it in a little, like, box and have to stick it with, because if you shake it, people are going to think, oh, well, what is this?
No, it's just, you do you not grill in the summer? Charcoal?
That's not real coal. I'm talking about straight from the mines coal. Like out of West Virginia or something like that.
Now we're just splitting hairs, but no, it has been, you know, from last year's Christmas episode, even prior to that, it's been a pleasure.
It's been a fun year because this is going to be wrapping up this year all together for 2015 for the NBA team between Adam Murray and myself. We're going to be back. We're going to take a little bit of a break as the new year comes along, but we will be back as we have a couple of specials in mind. We got a lot of really good stuff in store for you as we. As we continue with the NBA regular season, a lot of specials in mind. We don't want to tease too many things because we have a lot of different ideas. This year, just give me the last image of the NBA this year that you think of right off the top of your head is what?
Oh, this will be the image of the NBA that you know I'm taking away is the Celtics when they played the Cavs. Mm-hmm. There was a Special Olympics kid, and LeBron, you know. Shook his hand, cheered him, gave him his shoes afterwards. Wasn't prompted by anybody. It wasn't a league-sponsored thing. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, seeing nice things happen.
And that was a very contentious game, too, on the court. I'm glad it didn't spill off the court.
It's good to see, you know, people's superstars and heroes and get paid millions of dollars not being selfish and doing something nice. And then Russell Westbrook visited some kid in the hospital who will be a quadriplegic, mm-hmm. a 13-year-old kid. Just no cameras, no nothing, just sat with him for an hour, talked to him. That's what,
That's
amazing. You don't hear that in the NFL.
That's the enriching part of being a star athlete, that you can really touch people like that. So it is good.
Yeah.
For me, the lasting image, just in terms of like the overall scale as I think about it, and as narrow-minded as it is, and maybe you can go to, you know, you can really kill me for it, I think it's still Klay Thompson's third quarter against the Kings. That's the, I mean, I don't think we will ever see that again.
Well, didn't he just drop like 30 again?
27. That's still 10 less than what he did. But no, that's Will Chamberlain. Like that's like Kobe 81. That's like Jordan doing 63 in the playoffs. And it's the type of transcendence as a scorer that you just will. It cannot be duplicated. It can only be enjoyed, and it can only be enjoyed once. It's like the fountain of youth. You can only drink it once.
Yeah.
It's that really stands out, along with a lot of other great moments in the NBA this year that we're going to be closing out. So, on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Happy holidays.